Tell me when we're on. Krishna Govinda, Hari Murari. Hey Govinda, hey Gopal. Yes, welcome. And we are back again. This is our third session. We're just discussing vows. And last week, the last 2 weeks, we spoke about something very important. And that is often not following our vows. It's not a particular problem with the vow itself, but the principle of following vows or being responsible or being committed. And I don't know if you were here when I spoke about that, but I just want to go over that a little bit. When we speak about following vows or being committed, sometimes we're looking at something particular in which we're making the effort to be committed to. And we may find it difficult to be committed to that. And we may say that I'm having a hard time being committed to such and such. And that may be true. But what also may be true is globally just the principle of commitment. We may have difficulty with commitment. And one of the things that has come up for me is that I like to look at my little commitments, little promises I make to people, and just note if I'm following through. We may think, well, it's not a big thing. We tell somebody we're going to do something, and we don't do it. What does that have to do with my bigger vows? Well, it may not necessarily, but at the same time, it might. It might have a lot to do with that. So I asked you a couple weeks ago, if you weren't here, I asked you, think about anyone you've promised you would do something for or give something back. Perhaps you borrowed something. Or just a promise that you told somebody you would do, a commitment you made that you haven't followed through on. And when you start to do that, you start to realize that we often say things that we may not even remember we said, or we may not have seriously been committed to doing. Just kind of said it for whatever reason. Just to pacify someone, make them feel good. And then as soon as we said it, we sometimes may forget that we even said it. I know my daughter oftentimes reminds me of things that I told her, which I completely forgot, which is a red flag for me, that why am I saying things if I don't mean it? And so if you do that, you'll probably find some things that you told people you would do that you haven't done, or you've told people you would get back to them, you haven't yet gotten back to them timely, within the time frame you told them you would, or within the time frame they expect you would. Sometimes you don't say it, but they may expect you. And that's another aspect of commitment, to look at commitment from the other person's point of view, or what they might be expecting when you say something. What you might be expecting is one thing, and what they may be expecting is another thing. So in this way, we're looking at commitment, we're looking at vows within bhakti, also from the point of view of our own personal integrity as our own character of an honest person, a committed person, a person who can be trusted, not just solely as a particular commitment that we may be having difficulty with. And so when we talk about commitment, then we need to talk about integrity. Integrity comes from the word integrated. And integrated in this sense means to be a person who, when they say something, does what they say. That's to be integrated, not that you have two sides of you, and one side is you say something and the other side is you don't even remember what you said, or you don't take seriously what you said. So we can't talk about commitment and vow without talking about integrity, being a person who is not divided, is not a person who says one thing and does another. So we have been reading from a paper I wrote entitled You Promised, and if you are new here, that paper, I think, Sourav, you're new, Kam, I mean, maybe you've seen the show before, I don't know, but I'm going to give you the web address if you want to get this article. If you go to www.tstrain.com, and then you go to newsletters, and then you scroll down, there's over 40 newsletters, but you scroll down, I'm not sure what number it is, It's called You Promised. We're on the site now. I'm looking at the screen with the site. There it is, number 19, issue number 19. So we're going to be reading from that. The version I'm reading is slightly edited from the version you will read on the website. And I wanted to welcome to the show Street Straw. Lower than the straw on the street. Or he's getting close to it. So we've read part of the article. Now we're reading from the subsection in the article entitled Who Should Take Initiation? And as always, I want to encourage you to ask questions whenever you like, because the nature of this program, because it's interactive, it gives you an opportunity to ask questions. So feel completely free to interrupt me at any time and ask your question. Now, we spoke previously about Srila Prabhupada's attitude towards vows. And I was just speaking a minute ago how when you make a vow, generally you make a vow to another person. Sometimes, of course, you make a vow to yourself. But when we're speaking of initiation, we are promising a spiritual master, or our spiritual master, or similarly, if you take a marriage vow, you're promising another person. And most commitments we make are made to other people. So, as I said before, it's important to understand what is the other person thinking, because I may be thinking one thing. Well, I made a commitment, but I was thinking this. But that may not be what the other person is thinking. So we've discussed a little bit about what Prabhupada, his attitude towards vows, what he was expecting of his disciples. And as I mentioned, if you read what Prabhupada said about vows, it was very heavy. He was very, very strict about it, that if you promise, then you should follow through, and that proves you are a gentleman, at least a gentleman. So, and I also mentioned that Prabhupada was strict because he knew that if he wasn't strict with us, then we would take advantage of that. And then instead of committing to our vows, we would possibly say, "Well, I will try. I'll see how it goes." Srila Prabhupada did not want us to try. He wanted us to be committed to our vows. Now, as I also said, he understands that sometimes, apichet, even someone who is trying to follow their best may not always be able to do that. That's understandable. And he encouraged us to continue no matter what happens. Yet there was this other side, very, very heavy. And I had mentioned that we're starting from that point, and that is not the only point. And I wanted to now talk about initiation a little further. We did mention it last week. A question was asked of the importance of initiation. And initiation is important, but it's important for those who are ready for it. It's not important when you're not ready. I mean, it's always important, but it's not that one should think, "I must commit when I'm not able to," or "I must take initiation even if I'm not able to commit." That's not wanted. And I wanted to read a little something I wrote about that. So this begins the section entitled, "Who Should Take Initiation?" Generally, devotees who take initiation think they will keep their vows for life. I don't, that's generally, if you come to that platform and you're taking a vow, then you're thinking, "Yes, I'm vowing for life." Generally, although I know some devotees who've taken initiation who thought they'll follow the vows as best they can, and then in the future, when they're older, they'll follow them perfectly. There are devotees who take initiation before they are absolutely certain they can follow all the regulative principles. Understanding that a formal relationship with a guru is necessary, they feel it's important to take initiation sooner than later. By the way, Srila Prabhupada waited. Who knows how many years Prabhupada waited? Any of you out there in Krishna.com land know how long Prabhupada waited from the time he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Does anybody know? How many years? Wow, look at Bhakti and Carol. She's dancing in ecstasy. That's amazing. Prabhupada waited 11 years. You can't see what's on the screen, but she cleverly drew a devotee with their arms in the air. So Prabhupada waited 11 years, but when he met his spiritual master, he said, "I accepted him as my spiritual master. I accepted him in my heart," and that was the real initiation. But he took formal initiation after 11 years. So, understanding that a formal relationship with a guru is necessary, they feel it's important to take initiation sooner or later. Or they feel that initiation might give them the strength and impetus to better follow the regulative principles. Someone might be unsure or having difficulty following, and they think, if I take initiation and make a formal commitment, then I will be able to follow. There are other reasons. Some devotees feel pressure to take initiation before they are ready. Peer pressure. When are you going to get initiated? What are you waiting for? You're waiting so long. Why don't you do it? Like that. Others want to get initiated in order to belong, to be part of a community of initiated devotees. Perhaps sometimes devotees are in a situation where they haven't really introspected, haven't really looked at themselves in an honest way, in a deep way, in a holistic way, to see if they're really ready for initiation. But they want to belong to the community of initiated devotees, and that becomes an impetus. Prabhupada's idea was different. Devotees who take initiation should be determined to follow their vows from day one. And if you have taken initiation and stopped following your vows, chart out a gradual plan to begin following them again. So that was Prabhupada's idea, that don't take initiation if you're not 100% sure. And if you have taken initiation and you're not able to perfectly follow, then make a plan how to someday get back to following. So what was going on in the early days of the movement? You might question what I'm saying, because if you read in the Lilamrita, you'll find that people were getting initiation very easily. Sometimes someone would ask Prabhupada, "Can I take initiation?" And Prabhupada would say, "Who is Krishna?" And they would say, "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And Prabhupada would say, "Who are you?" And they would say, "I'm spirit soul, I'm eternal part and parcel of Krishna, I'm his servant." And then Prabhupada would say, "Okay, you can get initiated tomorrow." And in the first initiations, they didn't even know they were going to have to follow the regulative principles. So if you look at that and think, well, Prabhupada gave it very easily, so why should I be so concerned? Wouldn't it be better to connect with a guru and do my best to follow the principles? And then if I can't follow, at least there's a connection there. So one may think that way, but later on we find things changed, and as devotees were leaving, devotees who accepted initiation were falling from their vows or leaving the movement, Prabhupada became more concerned. And he said, "We have to tighten up, we have to be more strict." So based on that, I'm saying that no one should rush into initiation. One should be certain, as far as possible, that one can follow the principles. I would say the same thing for anything we do. Don't rush into any commitment. Be certain. If you make a commitment, be certain, as far as you can be, that you're going to follow through. Otherwise, it's better not to make it. Even the Shastra says we should be careful about making vows. Particularly, we should be careful about making vows that we are not 100% certain we can make. So, now that's from Prabhupada's perspective. We're looking at it from his perspective, that he expected those who had taken vows would follow them. And we may think, well, I can take initiation, and then if I follow later, it's okay. I don't have to follow now. That's not how Prabhupada was thinking. And again, he was also thinking that if you have taken initiation and you're not able to follow perfectly, then at least make a plan how eventually you will be able to follow perfectly. That's the idea. And there are many reasons, which we're not going into here, of the importance of following these principles for our own benefit. But one aspect of that, the obvious aspect of that is that we become trustworthy as disciples. That we want to be trustworthy to our spiritual master, and we want to be trustworthy to Krishna. We don't want to tell Krishna, who appears in the form of initiation, in the form of the fire at initiation, we don't want to tell Krishna something that we are not going to be able to do. So we want to be trustworthy to Krishna. We want to be trustworthy to our guru. And we want to be trustworthy to any person that we make a commitment to. And you all know that if someone has made a commitment to you and not followed through on it, you feel disappointed, to say the least. And sometimes when that happens, you may feel that you can't trust that person any longer, especially if the person did not keep their word on a very big promise. It's natural to feel that way. So we know from our own experience how important it is if somebody commits to us to follow through on their commitment. So if we remember that, then we can also take the other person's point of view who we commit to. Now, I was making the point earlier and in previous sessions that there can be an effect upon our bigger vows by not following smaller vows. And how could that be? It could be that we're not taking them, if we don't take the little promises we make seriously, it could kind of create a habit, or it may be indicative of a habit we already have, or a nature, that we are not as responsible as we need to be. And that's why we may not take our little promises as seriously as the person we promised is expecting us to. And so if we don't take the little ones, we may not take the big ones. One time Srila Prabhupada said, you know, a lot of times devotees would throw out the world or word or use the expression big devotee. And sometimes I think Prabhupada found that funny, because it's kind of an oxymoron, big devotee, because no devotee wants to think they're big. Big devotee would be small. Someone who thinks they're small would be a big devotee, so-called. But anyway, it's sometimes when there was discussion of big devotee, Prabhupada said, a big devotee is one who follows all the rules, the big ones and the little ones. So if we apply that idea to commitments, a committed person is one who's committed to the big commitments and the little commitments. And we see in our life, if we just see how we live our life, relationships naturally require commitment. I'm going to meet you at this time, at this place, tomorrow. I will call you back tomorrow at this time. I'll call you back and let you know what happened. We have an appointment. We're going to do such and such every week. That's just the nature of life. That's how things go on. So it's powerful for us. It's very empowering to take our commitments more seriously. You know, when we don't take it seriously, it sends a message to people that, well, you're not worth it. Yeah, I told you I was going to be there at this time, but whatever, you're not worth it. You know, of course, you don't tell them you're not worth it, but it sends that message. You're not worth me being on time. It's okay that you were waiting. So we don't want to deal with people that way. We don't want to minimize the value, their value. So if we value people, if we value our word, then we'll be committed. Now, I have this experience that many times I talk with someone and they tell me they're going to do something, and we make a plan, and I'm expecting them to do something which they don't do. And they not only do they not do it, they don't call me to tell me that they can't do it. And not only that, they may call 2 or 3 weeks later and to tell me they're sorry while I'm waiting 2 or 3 weeks to find out what happened. And I know for myself personally, it's difficult to deal with a person like that. Why? Because I can't trust them. And I think we all have this experience. So we like working with people we can trust. So now, just imagine what it's like to be a spiritual master. And disciples are promising, but they're not following. You know, in a sense, I mean, I don't want to say this as a criticism or an absolute reality, but in a sense, at least we can think this way, that if I've committed to my spiritual master, or to my spouse, or to my children, or to my associates, friends, employers, if I commit to them and I don't follow through, then in some way, at least we can ask this question, am I devaluing that person? Am I devaluing that relationship? Because if I value the relationship, wouldn't I want to follow them? Of course. Now we have this other side. Well, sometimes we may be overcome by situations and we just can't handle a particular situation and therefore we don't follow, or we're not able to control ourselves sufficiently to follow through on certain commitments. Particularly here I'm talking about spiritual vows. So that's a reality, that sometimes it may be beyond our control, that we bit off more than we can chew. But still, if we value the person who we committed to, then we should let them know that and discuss that with them. And we want to be, as I said, integrated. We don't want to be divided people, living a divided life of committed to one thing verbally but not committed in action. So if we can't keep up a commitment, we may want to speak to that person. Say, I know I committed. I'm finding it difficult. Can we modify this commitment? I mean, some things can't be modified. Like, if you borrowed money, you don't want to go back to the friend and modify it. At least I hope you don't borrow money from me and do that. So you get the idea that sometimes we just want to be an integrated person. We want to be a person of integrity. If you're meant to call someone or get back to someone or meet someone, at least tell them. I won't be able to do it today. Call them in advance. Tell them why. Like that. So that will help strengthen it will make us a more committed person, a person of integrity, and that will enable us to better follow the bigger promises we make. Following bigger promises, no one's saying that it's easy. You know, following promises, commitments, oftentimes means you have to suffer. You have to set aside something you want to do. You have to set aside personal desires. You may have to take on some inconvenience. You have to hold off on satisfying yourself. It can mean so many things. But that's what a committed person is. That's what a committed person means. So just the word commitment is a powerful word if you think about it. Because the word commitment means you're not allowing any other possibility to take place other than what you committed to. That's really what commitment means, that I'm going to do this. If a person is completely committed or totally committed, then when they say, I'm going to do something, in their heart, in their consciousness, in their minds, in their beings, they are no longer allowing any other outcome other than the outcome they're committed to. And commitment comes in many ways. You may be committed to a particular job, or you may be committed to a particular goal. I'm going to get this done by this date. It may be a commitment to yourself. So, but the principle is commitment distinguishes itself from trying, or distinguishes itself from wanting, by not allowing any other outcome. If you're committed to a particular outcome, that means, yes, this is the outcome that is going to take place. And we gave that example that Prabhupada gave. When a person is committed to fasting, then it becomes easy to, well, never easy to fast, but it becomes much easier to fast than if one is thinking, maybe I will fast. So in the same way, if you're making a commitment, but internally you're not committed, If you're promising, but internally you're thinking, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't, it becomes extremely difficult to do it because you're allowing yourself what? What are you allowing? You're allowing the option, you're allowing yourself the option not to do it. And we all know that's a much more difficult position than just removing the options. Just like if you want to get up at a certain time, you are committed to that. You tell yourself, this is the time I'm getting up. There are no other options. This is the time. Then it's much easier to get up than thinking, well, I'll try to get up at that time. Or I'll try to do this tonight, as opposed to I will finish this tonight before I go to sleep. It's a different world. It's a different consciousness. It's a different paradigm. So then, if we are committed that way, we become trustworthy. We become someone that our spiritual master can trust, other people can trust, our spouses can trust, our friends can trust, and that's integrity. You find this in the Mahabharata. You find this. It's so important. Whenever a kshatriya, a warrior, gives his word, that's it. They take the word so seriously. You know that story of Arjuna won Draupadi. I think it was Arjuna, wasn't it? Who knows? Arjuna. Arjuna won Draupadi. So before Arjuna won Draupadi, there was a principle in that family that whatever the brothers had, whatever they acquired, Mother Kunti would always tell them that you share it equally. So because she said that, they honored it. So when they came home with Draupadi, they said, "Mother, I brought something home." And her mother, Mother Kunti, she didn't know what it was. And Mother Kunti said, "Well, okay, Arjuna, share it equally with your brothers." So that was, they were committed to do that. So that is how Draupadi ended up with the five Pandavas as her five husbands. It was just, he didn't think, "But mother, you don't understand. I have to explain this." It just, they had already given their word. And so therefore they did it. There are many, many examples. If you have a time or if you've read the Mahabharata, you'll find many examples of this in, Kshatriya values, that once they've given their word, that's it. They'll do whatever it is. If it means killing themselves or whatever is involved, if they've given their word, then they follow that. And there's a very nice story. I don't know if you've heard this story, but even if you had, it's worth repeating. Bhaktitirtha Maharaj was in his last days in great pain. He had cancer, and it was, he couldn't get comfortable, and it's difficult to sleep, but at least if he slept, it would give him some relief. So one night, he was awake and he was chanting his rounds. So Radhanath Swami came and said, "Maharaj, you're in so much pain. Why don't you just go to sleep? You're so weak now. It's not important or necessary that you chant your rounds. You just take rest." And Bhaktitirtha Maharaj said, "No, I've made a promise to Srila Prabhupada to chant my rounds. And every day I've chanted my rounds. And I can't give it up because I made that promise." So that's what commitment means. No matter where or what we are or what we're doing, if we make that promise, then we follow through. Now, we all may not be on that platform. We all may not be a Bhaktitirtha Maharaj. But my point in giving these classes is that we should aspire for that. If we're not there yet, we should aspire for that. And how do we aspire for it? Well, first we understand what it is, what commitment means, what is expected of us when we commit, and then aspire to become a committed person. And the more committed person we become, then the easier we will find it to follow the principles that we commit to. Now, it's very difficult to follow the regulative principles throughout one's life. It's not going to be easy, or it's not easy for those of you who are already committed. But the more we become committed persons, the easier, or we could say the less difficulties we will run into. because we'll have that strength to fall back on when we're feeling weak or we're feeling it's difficult to follow through. We can always fall back on this, I promised, this is what I'm going to do, I've committed, I'm even though it's difficult, this is what I told my spiritual master I would do, so therefore I can become more tolerant. I can become more self-disciplined. It gives us an extra, it gives us that strength. See, vows are empowering. That's often something which is difficult for us to do. If we take a vow in our heart, a true vow in our heart, we become empowered by that vow. That's the power of a vow. But of course, if we make it prematurely, then the vow may cause us more harm than good. So, does anyone have any questions so far on this? Before I go on, I will wait a moment because I'm going to read the next section. Yes, Bhaktin Carol is saying, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, it's very impressive. That is a real disciple. That in the good times and the bad times, they follow through. It's not only that disciples are committed to follow regular principles, but they're committed to the instructions, to follow the instructions as best they can of their spiritual master, all the instructions. That's part of the commitment of a disciple, and part of the commitment also is to give that to others. So if we actually really analyze our life as devotees, we'll see that there are so many things which are expected of us. And then gradually, as we become more committed, we'll be able to do more and more of them. Just like Srila Prabhupada regretted or lamented or was remorseful that he could not immediately follow the orders of his spiritual master. But in his heart, that order was always there. So even I cannot perfectly follow all the instructions of my spiritual master, if the desire is there, if in my heart those instructions remain and I have the intense desire to someday follow, that is also being committed. So we could say that really Srila Prabhupada was committed to preaching Krishna consciousness in the West from that first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He just wasn't able to execute it at that time because he was married. He was newly married, he had young children. But you could say he was fully committed to that, right? Even though externally he wasn't executing it. So sometimes we may be internally committed to something that we're not able to fully commit to externally. But it's part of the nature and the emotion and the attitude of a committed person to be committed, even if I'm not physically able at a certain point in my life to be totally committed. If so, our example could be perhaps I cannot follow all the principles right now, or I cannot follow everything my spiritual master teaches, or I cannot follow everything Srila Prabhupada teaches, but I'm committed to following them at some point in my life. And Prabhupada talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita. As long as we're not adverse to the principle, that is in a sense the same as surrender. At least we're open to it. And surrender, full surrender, may take many lives or many years at least. But we're not adverse to it. We're not averse to it. Not adverse. We're not averse to it. Okay. So I'm going to read on because there are no questions. Okay, this section is entitled I Just Can't Follow. So this is dealing with reality for many that they take a vow and they feel they can't follow. And oftentimes that's true, and oftentimes it's not true. It often When we say I can or I can't, it can be subjective. And there's many things that we perhaps in the past thought we couldn't do that we're now doing, either voluntarily or by force of circumstance, we just did it. So I want to address that. If Prabhupada thought that Krishna consciousness wasn't powerful enough to enable us to control our senses, he wouldn't have initiated us. In other words, initiation was Prabhupada's faith in the process of bhakti, in the process of sadhana, in the power of the holy name, that if anyone took it up wholeheartedly, they'd be able to control themselves. But he knew if we practiced Krishna consciousness properly and lived in the mode of goodness, we could follow the four principles. That means we practice properly and we live in the mode of goodness. As I said in the last two sessions, environment is very important. If you want to follow, be committed to something or follow a vow, you have to create an environment which supports that, not an environment which undermines it. If you have formerly been an alcoholic, you don't want to hang out with people who are drinking. Okay. Prabhupada was once told about a sincere devotee who was having trouble following his vows. Prabhupada's analysis was that he was, quote, strongly under the grip of ignorance. This was an initiated devotee, and it was reported to Prabhupada that he was sincere, but he was having difficulty following. And then Prabhupada said that means he's strongly under the grip of ignorance, because if you're strongly under the grip of ignorance, it's practically you have no willpower. Keeping vows requires living in goodness as much as possible. Things like staying up late and watching movies full of sexual scenes will obviously make it difficult to be celibate. It's already difficult to be celibate. What to speak of? Doing those kind, you know, it's already, even if you don't do those things, it's difficult. What to speak of doing them? Often we say things like, I just can't follow, while we choose to do the very things that make it difficult or impossible for us to not follow. I'll read that again because that's important. Often we say things like, I just can't follow, while we choose, that's an important word here, while we choose to do the very things that make it difficult or impossible for us to follow. So the idea here that I just can't follow may be true under the circumstances, or with the information we have, or with the knowledge we have. But it may not be true because we can choose to look at things differently, we can choose to act differently, we can choose to become more well-educated about the situation that we're dealing with, and we can choose to learn ways to become more empowered to deal with it. So when we say, I can't, that may be true in the present circumstances or within our present abilities and education, but it doesn't mean it's permanently true. And it could be instantly not true just by changing an attitude or by getting different association or changing the environment that we're in. Environment is very powerful. Association is very, very powerful. Attitude is very powerful. Commitment is very powerful, but we often need the proper environment to be committed. At times, I have entertained the idea of being more accommodating by lowering our standards. In many ways, this seems more practical. In other words, I'm saying, I've toyed with the idea, not that I was thinking of changing exactly everything that Prabhupada taught us, but just in my own mind, toying with the idea that maybe because it's so difficult for devotees to follow strictly all the principles of Krishna consciousness, maybe we should just have a lower standard, like have a lower standard for initiation. In many ways, this seems more practical. If we set a lower initiation standard, more devotees will be able to keep their vows. So that was the idea. Okay, instead of making four vows, you make three vows or two vows, and then now you're following your vows. But since Prabhupada never introduced this standard, we cannot change it. That even if we think perhaps it might be more accommodating or more encouraging to more people, There's, to my knowledge, no indication that Prabhupada allowed any other standard, at least for initiation. As far as devotees who aren't initiated, that's another thing. But as far as devotees who are initiated, this is the standard that he has kept, and I don't suspect that's going to change. Although an individual disciple may renegotiate, you know, like when you owe money and you can't pay it back, you can renegotiate with a company and say, "Well, I owe you 10,000. Either I'm going to go bankrupt or I'll pay you 5,000. What do you want?" So they'll say, "Okay, pay me 5,000." So you're renegotiating your debt. So you may want to tell your spiritual master, "Either I go bankrupt or I renegotiate." So you may need to renegotiate. That's different. To deal with the dilemma of not following, some have suggested that people can take lesser vows outside of a formal initiation. This would be a means of preparing for initiation in the future, a sort of pre-initiation. In other words, what we have now is that someone may want to take initiation, make a connection with the spiritual master, but they're not 100% certain they can follow all the principles and they can chant 16 rounds every day. So what to do? So some suggest, well, what you could do is connect with that spiritual master, even connect with a Siksha guru, someone who's not officially or formally giving initiation, and make a lesser vow. I will chant this number of rounds, I will follow these principles. And then from there, build yourself up. In other words, you're at least keeping the commitments that you're making rather than making commitments, more commitments, and only keeping half of them or not keeping all of them, whatever it may be. Make a lesser vow, yes. Street Saw says, yes, make a lesser vow. So the problem that we deal with now is that people want connection with a guru, but they're not ready for initiation, and they're not ready for initiation vows. So something lesser can be done. You keep what you maintain, yes. Welcome, fallen soul. So we have fallen soul with us. So fallen soul knows all about this. Right, fallen soul? You know all about this. That we want to maintain our fallen level steadily and not fall below our fallen level by making commitments we cannot keep, then losing the trust of the person we committed to. And also what it does is you may know that when you commit to something and you fall short of it, it can be very discouraging. Whereas if you commit to something that you can keep, it can be very encouraging. Yes, let's say I can't chant 16 rounds a day, I can chant 8. I've been chanting 8 rounds for many years, so that's encouraging. But if you were chanting 8 rounds for many years but committed to 16, you might be extremely discouraged. Say, I'm such a rascal, I'm such a fallen person that I committed to 16 but I'm only chanting 8. Whereas by doing the same thing but only committing to 8, you would feel somewhat proud of yourself, gratified that I've been able to keep the commitment. So, Bhakti and Carol says, what reactions are there to not keeping vows? Well, if we take a vow and we accidentally fall down, there's really no reaction if we get ourselves back up. It's the problem is if we continually do not follow. That can be more problematic. That may also depend on the spiritual master. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said it could have negative effects, more negative effects than not taking initiation. I've discussed this with some spiritual masters, and they feel that even though a disciple is not fully following, they have a connection with their guru, and that connection will eventually help them. Perhaps they need that connection to get back up on their feet. My personal opinion is that I would be cautious before taking any vow, any commitment, and that I would make sure that I can follow it. Because I think in general it's a safer and better position to follow a lesser commitment steadily than to fall short of a bigger commitment. I mean, even if Krishna, even if we say from the spiritual, let's say for the sake of discussion, from the spiritual perspective, there's no negativity there. You tried your best, you couldn't follow, and now you're doing your best to do what you can do. So let's say for the sake of discussion, that's fine. But still, it may have a negative effect on you personally, that, oh, I committed for something greater and I wasn't able to do it. And you may feel discouraged. It can actually have the opposite effect. Same point I was making before. Encouraged by chanting 8 rounds, discouraged by chanting 8 rounds, depending on what your commitment was. So it can cause guilt, it can cause shame, and that can have very negative effects on us. At the same time, if one cannot follow, then one has to come to terms with that. And if one continually remains feeling guilty, that makes it that much more difficult to get back up on one's feet. So, anytime I would say, anytime we commit to do something and we don't do it, it has some negative effect. It may have a negative effect that's so subtle that we are not even aware of it. But if we think about it, then we'll see most likely there's some negative feelings there, and we have to deal with that. We have to confront it and deal with it and process it and get over it so we can go on enthusiastically and just take off, or land, I could say land, wherever we're going to land on the principles we can follow and then move on from there. And Krishna sees our sincerity. For some people it's very easy to fall in that. I wouldn't say very easy, but for some people it's not a major struggle to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, and for others it is. So for the ones who are struggling, it may be more difficult for them to follow lesser principles than it is for others to follow all the principles. So Krishna appreciates that. And part of the problem that we're dealing with is, as I was saying before, that not everybody can follow strictly 4 regulative principles in 16 rounds. And it doesn't seem that we have enough room for those kinds of people where they can feel comfortable in being connected and not having a spiritual name, but being connected to a spiritual master in some way. So that's why sometimes people attempt to bite off more they can chew and take initiation before they may be ready. So, it's a serious commitment, as is any commitment. Did that answer your question, Bhakti and Carol? I just read before I came, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said it can produce more harmful effects to take vows we can't keep. But Srila Prabhupada said he is 80% lenient or 90% lenient, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was 90% strict. So Prabhupada wanted us to be gentlemen, and he wanted us to do our best. I think that's the real key, Do our best. If we have a problem, we would do our best to deal with it. Does it harm the guru? Well, that's a very good question. Does it harm the guru? Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it does harm the guru. Prabhupada said that at initiation, not only Prabhupada said this, but this is according to Shastra and the version of the Acharyas, at initiation, one's sinful activities, one is purified of sinful reactions. And Srila Prabhupada said, the spiritual master has to take those sinful reactions, but Krishna being kind upon him will burn up those sinful reactions. But specifically, Prabhupada has written in the Bhagavatam that when a disciple commits a sinful activity, then the spiritual master has to suffer for that sin. One example Prabhupada gave is the spiritual master has to see bad dreams. And then Prabhupada said, therefore, it is warned that a guru should not take many disciples. because he has to digest the sinful reactions. But specifically or particularly, Prabhupada referred to the guru taking on the sinful reactions of a disciple who has taken initiation, who later on commits sin. Then Prabhupada went on further to say that the spiritual master will have to come back to save that disciple, and Prabhupada said, so don't make me come back. So that's, you know, that's something to consider. If I'm going to take initiation, then I don't want my spiritual master to suffer on my behalf. You know, we have this idea in Christianity that Jesus suffered for the sins of his people. So Prabhupada acknowledged that. Sometimes he didn't, but today we were reading in the temple that he said that, yes, Jesus suffered for the sinful activities of his followers. And he said that, but they continue sinning, thinking that he'll accept the reaction. He said, that's not the proper way to think. In a sense, that is the most offensive way to think. So, you know, if we take initiation, then we really want to take the responsibility as far as possible of the vows we make, so our spiritual master doesn't suffer for that. Yes, Streetsa says, Prabhupada said, he's quoting Prabhupada here, don't give extra trouble to your spiritual master. That would indicate being a spiritual master is troublesome already. Delivering disciples, one time Srila Prabhupada said, our hearts are like coal. So the more you clean, you can't clean coal, you just keep cleaning, and it's just more dirt. So it's already enough trouble for Srila Prabhupada or our spiritual masters to save us, so we don't want to give them more trouble. Yes, Jesus, so Prabhupada, you know, strongly criticized this idea that Jesus suffered for our sins, and therefore we can go on sinning. You know, I mean, could you imagine? You take initiation and you think, well, my guru will suffer for my sins. I don't have to accept the reactions. So that's his mercy. That's his kindness. It's not, you know, I mean, that's the mercy of the guru that they do that. But the disciple, it's really, the disciple has a big, big part to play. I was just reading today, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a lecture on the topic of initiation. And in that lecture, he said that really everything depends on the disciple. I mean, you know, making the assumption that the guru is a bona fide guru, and he's in a bona fide disciplic line, and he's giving proper instruction. He said, really, it's up to the disciple. Oftentimes Prabhupada said initiation means to put the disciple on the proper path. Now it's up to the disciple to choose how they'll act. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is saying it depends on the effort of the disciple. Like the disciple is put on the path. Sinful past is removed. He's given knowledge. This is the path. This is the goal. Now it's up to him. It's his effort. So really so much depends on the disciple. So, more questions or comments? Yes. So, Bhushan is with us. Okay, does anyone have any other questions? If not, I'll give you a moment here. Well, we only have 5 minutes, so you might as well ask more questions. Well, let me read the last paragraph of this section. We were talking about lowering standards, the possibility of lowering standards, but it doesn't seem to be a possibility within ISKCON because Prabhupada didn't indicate we could do that. Of course, in the future, anything is possible, but here we're also suggesting making commitments without taking initiation, making commitments to a guru, Diksha guru or Siksha guru, and then gradually coming to the platform and being able to follow. Someone else was using my name. I have a mystic power where I can talk and type at the same time, if that's what you mean. There's the devotee here typing for me. He's reading my mind and he's typing for me. He's got mystic power. He's channeling me. Okay. Well, let me read a few of the last sentences of the previous paragraph so we know where we left off. Since Prabhupada never introduced the standard, I'm referring to a lower initiation standard. We cannot change it. Still, to deal with the dilemma of not following, some have suggested that people can take lesser vows outside of a formal initiation. This would be a means of preparing for initiation in the future, a sort of pre-initiation. This and similar programs have their merits. Yet, in any case, I still think there needs to be education about vows. Because even if you do this, even if you say, well, I'll chant four rounds a day and follow three principles, or two and a half, or three and a half, or two and three quarters, whatever, and I'll follow a certain set of practices of bhakti, I'll get up at a certain time, or I'll offer my food every meal, or I'll only offer it on Sunday, whatever you decide you're going to do, still you're making a commitment. So that's why I'm saying I feel it's important to discuss vows, what they are, what it means to be committed, and how to be committed. We all need to better understand what it means to take and keep a vow and what causes us to break vows. Yes. So, yes, Uddhava, short Udi is Uddhava, and he's channeling me on the chat room. So, what causes us to break vows? This is a very good question that every devotee should ask themselves. Why would I break a vow? If I commit to do something, why would I not follow through on it? And really look deeply in your heart. This can be your homework for next week. Just throw this question at yourself and ponder it. Why would I commit? Why would I, you know, when I pondered this question, I even took it further. I said, why would I even think about not committing? Just like if you study some counselors who counsel couples, one thing that they will generally say, at least what I've read, and I think this is good advice, you never, ever, ever want to use the word divorce in your relationship. You just don't bring it up. Why don't you bring it up? Obviously. Because once you bring up that word, now you're entertaining the possibility. So then I was thinking, okay, I've made a vow to my wife, to my guru, to my children, to my friends, to in business, people I work with. Why would I even think? Why would I in my mind even think? Just like I've committed to my wife, why would I even use the word divorce? So why would I even, what to speak of, use it? Why would I even think about it? It's an interesting question to introspect a little more, to look at ourselves and meditate also what I was speaking about earlier today, earlier in this session, was the word integrity, which means to be whole. So I've committed to do one thing, but I'm thinking about not doing it. That's not what a whole person does. You could say that's schizophrenic. You know, integrity means to be whole. And to lose integrity is, in a sense, to be schizophrenic, that I'm saying one thing, but I'm not committed to doing what I say. Now, why would I say it? And I'm saying I will do something. I'm somewhat schizophrenic on the subtle platform because I think I contemplate not doing it. Of course, due to our conditioning, that may be there. But as we reflect on why I would not be committed, We can ask ourselves that question. Why am I even thinking about it? If I'm actually, am I really committed? Did I really commit? This is how I asked myself. I said, okay, I committed. I thought I committed to doing certain things, but sometimes I find in my mind temptations to break those promises that I made. So then I would have to ask myself, well, did I really commit? If I'm thinking in my mind, contemplating doing something other than I was committed to do, or other than I committed to do, did I really commit? I would ask myself that question. Really look, did I commit? And we can recommit. If we think perhaps I didn't, then we can recommit. Say, let me commit fully to that. I told this person I'm committed to this, but did I fully commit? And if you don't think you have committed, then you can recommit more fully. Okay, I'm going to read. Bhushan said, I read an article by His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, called When Bhajan Becomes Bhojan. He tells the disciples should be 100% surrendered and completely free from material motivations and should be on guard, else the bhajan will become bhojan. Bhojan means eating, right? Or it can also mean sense gratification. This seems to be heavy, and how do we try to follow it? Well, in the movement, the Gaudiya Math, it was only for renounced people. The Grihasthas didn't, as far as I know, they didn't live in the temple, and he was not that strict with the Grihasthas. He was strict with the Brahmacharis, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis who lived in the temple. And as Prabhupada said, he was 90% strict, and I'm 90% lenient. So that may explain, in some sense, how we take it. But this principle of material motivation, it's a powerful principle, because in the nectar of devotion, it recognizes that we can't be free in the practice stage, the sadhana stage, when we're beginning. We can't necessarily be free from material desire, but we can be free from material motivation. There's a difference between material desire and material motivation. You may have a material desire, but still you serve Krishna. And why do you serve Krishna? You serve Krishna because that's your position to serve Krishna. That is your motive. I'm a servant of Krishna, and I am meant to serve him. I am meant to serve my spiritual master, like that. So that's your motive. You're not serving Krishna to get something. Although you may have a desire to get something, but that's not the motivating factor for you to do service. So you're doing service and praying to Krishna, oh, Krishna, purify me of those desires. So you can see there's a difference between motive and having the desire. So that point he's making here, free from material motivations, he uses that word motivations. So he's saying we should be on guard about our motivations, what's motivating us. You know, we can be motivated for the wrong reasons. How do we try to follow it? Well, look at your motivations for doing service, maybe. Maybe you're motivated to be recognized. Maybe you're motivated to get everyone to like you. And that's why you do it. Maybe not the only reason you do it, but it could be a reason you do it. What could be another motivation? It could be so many motivations. Prabhupada describes them in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's to look at those things. Okay. So Streetstra is asking, Ekadasi Vrata. Today's Ekadasi, at least in Alachua. Did Lord Chaitanya heavy out his mother about following Ekadasi with extreme statements? No. His mother had a. This is what I remember. Someone could correct me if I'm wrong. He got heavy with his mother when she offended Advaitacharya. But he asked her to follow Ekadasi. I don't think he was heavy about following Ekadasi. Maybe I can't remember the story. Maybe the two go together. Do you know? I don't remember. She had inadvertently offended Advaitacharya. So he asked her to. So he's upset about that. He may have been very heavy about that. Yeah. You'll if you You can find that story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then you can see how it, I forget exactly how he relates to Ekadasi, but I know he said if you don't eat grains on Ekadasi, you'll become free from sinful reactions. And, but the real way she became free from the offense was by touching Advaitacharya's feet. So I have to leave it at that for now. But why don't you look that up and then you can report to us either now or later. Pakin Carroll has a question. Along the line of poor environment, poor association, what about in a relationship, marriage, when one partner follows and the other does not follow as well? Is the other partner dragged down? How much should we tolerate? How much should the wife tolerate? Is the other partner dragged down? They don't have to be. I think Bhaktin Carroll is asking, if the environment is not conducive, particularly if you have a marriage and your partner is not that much into Krishna consciousness, or perhaps not into it at all, or perhaps even against it, does it have to drag you down? Well, one answer to that question is only you can answer that question, because will you allow it to drag you down? How much will you allow it? I think the problem, not that I think, I know, that the problem often becomes the belief that it will drag us down. And then if we think, well, in this situation there are no other alternatives but to be dragged down, then inevitably we'll be dragged down. So my first suggestion would be, don't think that way, because that will empower you to think of ways to not be dragged down, or think of ways to become self-inspired, motivated. Now, I've read this by many, many people, both in the devotional world and outside of it, and they've said that motivation generally, if not always, comes from within, comes from your own motivation, your own inspiration to serve Krishna. So if you're very inspired to serve Krishna, that will motivate you even in an environment which is not ideally conducive. Well, how do you become inspired? Well, you connect with something that inspires you. You know when you're inspired to do something, if something you really like to do, then no one has to tell you how to do it. You're just inspired. So I would suggest for you to find services that you can do that are very inspirational. And I would also suggest that you don't hold on to any kind of belief that you need your spouse or partner to support you. Now, you also ask, well, what if it gets really, really bad? Can you move it up a little bit? What if it gets really bad? Yeah, so if that situation, I have to go up a little bit. I have to get to your question. Yeah, is the other partner dragged down, along or down? How much should we tell it? No, so I answered that part. The other partner doesn't have to be dragged down unless they think they're going to be dragged down. I've been in a lot of situations which are not Krishna conscious, and the way I dealt with them was simply with the realization that this situation doesn't have to drag me down unless I allow it to it. And it certainly looks like it's going to drag me down. But as long as I make a strategy, I just have to make a different strategy so I'm not dragged down. Because when we think, well, inevitably I'll be dragged down by this environment, we don't make a strategy to deal with it. And so the other part of your question, can you go up again? Yeah. Your question is, the other partner, how much should the wife tolerate? That Prabhupada once answered, and he just said, you know, do what is favorable for bhakti and avoid what's unfavorable. If it becomes so unfavorable for bhakti that you can't possibly be Krishna conscious in that situation, then you may have to take other measures. I don't know your situation, so I mean, we could talk privately about it. That's just a general instruction. How much should the wife tolerate? You should tolerate as much as you can, as long as it doesn't cause you to suffer greatly in devotional service. The point is you need to do what's favorable. Sometimes an environment which is not favorable can be favorable by making you stronger, because the unfavorable environment can make you stronger. So then it indirectly becomes favorable. You had to learn how to be stronger to deal in that environment. So that's something you have to look at. You know, so you might look at it and go, yeah, well, this situation will help me in many ways because I have to be stronger. Or it just may mean that you have to, talk it out with your partner in such a way that you can both live happily. Bhushan says, unless, quote, unless one possesses unalloyed devotion, he cannot have, whoops. We're losing it here. Unless one possesses unalloyed devotion, he cannot have the good fortune to receive initiation or teachings on devotional service from a spiritual master. Yeah, that is called sukriti. One has to have enough past devotional activity to meet a spiritual master. Of course, that can happen by meeting a spiritual master. He can give you that by his presence. All right, this chat we keep losing, spontaneously losing. Somebody doesn't want me to read this. Okay, if a person is careless, then after obtaining mantras and the process for worshiping, sorry, folks, I'm sure this is like totally boring for you to watch. Process for worshiping the Lord through oral reception, such mantras and rituals become the source of material attachment. This seems heavy. How do we follow it? Person, don't be careless, and don't misuse mantras. Mantras are meant for purification. He's saying that sometimes people take a spiritual master in the process of bhakti to use it to advance materially. Again, it goes back to the whole thing of motivation. The whole point is that bhakti is not meant to advance our material position. It's meant to detach us from and purify us. So, often we're not in touch with our motives. It's often hard to be honest, to be brutally honest with ourselves. So why am I doing this? If you start to be more honest with yourself, you'll notice a lot of things about yourself you've never noticed. A lot of times when we have these desires, we just don't want to confront them because they're so bad, or motivations that aren't pure. We don't want to confront them because we feel bad. But if we actually confront them and acknowledge them, it'll help us work through them. It'll make us more aware of how often it happens. Okay. Can you go back up again? Okay. Prabhupada's sister, Bhaktin Carol says, Prabhupada's sister set a good example. She was tolerant, yeah. Her husband was, I think, an alcoholic, amongst other things. Vedic times, wives were tolerant. It was a different culture. It was a different standard. But he became a devotee because he saw how tolerant she was. And she probably also understood that if she acted that way, he would become more Krishna conscious. And yes, we should try to be tolerant as far as possible. She could do that. You have to see how tolerant you are. So, okay, where are we here? Okay. Do we have any questions here? If the partner wants to involve the other in poor behaviors, yes, that's a problem. That's a problem. That needs to be discussed with the partner, your own personal commitments in your life. I mean, it's a reality that when you become Krishna conscious and your partner doesn't, there's going to be some friction there. And I just think the best thing is to discuss it in how you feel and what your needs are, and see if he can respect them and you respect his needs, and see if there's some compromise so that you can both live peacefully in and you can execute your bhakti. That's where I would start, stage one. And then maybe you've already done that, but we can talk further about it. You can email me, and then we can talk about it. So Prabhupada was asked this question about this one man. I think I told this story. This one man, his wife was cooking meat for the children, and he had become a devotee. He asked Prabhupada what to do, and Prabhupada gave a general answer. He said, do what's favorable for bhakti, and avoid what's not favorable. So that requires some intelligence. I don't know what the man eventually did. But it requires some intelligence. I would also say pray to Krishna to give you that intelligence, what to do in that situation. And, don't make any rash decisions and discuss it more with your husband and be understanding of his situation also and take time to work it out and think about it soberly. So it is now 9:17 and all is well in Alachua, and it's time that we end. We're supposed to end at 9, which we rarely do because you guys are such a lively bunch with so many wonderful questions that we go further. So I will like to, as they say, bid you adieu, and we're going to continue this discussion. And if you have any questions you can think of during the week, then please note them down. And I'm requesting you or offering you to consider this week, just contemplate why you may not follow all the vows or commitments that you make, or why you would even maybe following them, but thinking that you, but even thinking not to follow. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week, and Hare Krishna. Yes, this chatter really works. Dress like a sadhu, think like a sadhu. See you next week. See you next week. Streets draw.